welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
With Syosset Library's podcast. This is a special episode. Every so often we do these, especially within the times of the pandemic. So I'm going to allow our guests to introduce themselves. And we can start with the one who brought us all together and who is a Syosset resident. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Dr. Shuttle Shah. I'm the immediate past president of New York Chapter 2 of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which represents about 1,500 pediatricians in Brooklyn, Queens, Nassau, and Suffolk County. And in my day job, I'm a pediatrician and neonatologist in Westchester.
Excellent. And to his immediate, I guess to his immediate right, as I'm looking at her, because we're doing this over Zoom.
Hi, my name is Dr. Sarah Siddiqui. I'm a pediatrician in Huntington, and I'm also co-chair of the New York State American Academy of Pediatrics Legislative Committee, and I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And last but certainly not least.
Hi, good morning. My name is Dr. Leonard Krylov. I am also a district resident, and I am the chair of pediatrics and chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at now NYU Langone Long Island Hospital.
Thank you so much for joining us today, because this is actually a really important topic. We are technically, I guess, roughly 2 years into this COVID pandemic. We would all very much like to have some semblance of normal, whatever that may be. The topic we're going to be discussing today, Dr. Shah, if you would like to just mention it, and we'll go in, because there's a few questions that keep coming up about this topic, and I think that the community would be interested in hearing what their local healthcare professionals have to say about it.
Sure. So about a month ago, the FDA released the emergency use authorization and provided approval for COVID vaccines in children who are between the ages of 5 to 11. Now, that comes on top of the previous approvals and authorizations for children who were greater than 12. Now, once that approval came about a month ago, pediatricians really started getting inundated with questions about the vaccine safety, and should their child get vaccinated. So because these questions started coming up so frequently, that's when we decided to reach out to you and say, how can we sort of broadcast the answers and the way we see things for the most common questions? Because we think that if we provide this sort of background, then parents who then go into their pediatrician's office with questions about their specific child to get vaccinated, we'll really have the most important questions, or at least some of their questions, initially answered. And that'll allow for time to talk about not just the general issue of COVID and COVID vaccines, but really about what's important in getting their child vaccinated.
Yes, so it's all about making an informed decision. So what we're going to do is I will actually start with Dr. Krylov, and then I will go now to my left on Zoom screen to Dr. Siddiqui, and then back to Dr. Shah with some of these questions. The first question is, why should children be immunized against COVID if they are not dying from it? The numbers numbers that are seen in older adults. Dr. Krylov.
Thank you, Jessica. I think it's important to realize that the impact of an infection or a disease is not measured solely by mortality. And it's fortunate that the death rate or the mortality rate in children is low, but that does not mean the disease does not have a significant impact upon them. There are now over 160,000 children per week being diagnosed with this infection, making up almost a quarter of the total infections in this country. And of them, up to 4% get hospitalized, which is a significant event. Up to 4 to 5% are left with symptoms more than 2 months after, so-called long-haul COVID. There is also a complication called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, of which it can be lead to hospitalization, intensive care unit stay, and even a number of deaths. And there have been approaching 800 children who've died from this disease. If you look at the landscape, it somewhat looks like influenza now. The major mortality is in those elderly or with immune compromised condition, but the highest rates of infection are in children. And so if we have a safe, effective way to protect our children, I don't think just looking at mortality is the endpoint we should be using. The other corollary part of it would be that children then spread it to others as well. So by controlling this disease, we need to get everybody on board that we can, and would also potentially help decrease transmission to adults and high-risk patients.
Thank you so much. Okay, so Dr. Siddiqui, the next question is for you. It's why should I have my child immunized when the adult vaccination rate is high and the overall percent positivity in Nassau and Suffolk is lower than the rest of the country?
That's a great question. And even though we have high vaccination rates in adults, there are some adults that may be immunocompromised that don't have the full capacity or the full protection. And it is important to get our children vaccinated to help those around you that may not be fully able to build immunity secondary to vaccination. And it is an important public health effort as well. So you're not only getting vaccinated to improve your chances and decrease severity and decrease hospitalizations, but you're also doing it to protect those around you that may be more vulnerable even though they've been vaccinated. And that's really the entire effort of vaccinations, is to decrease the infectivity and decrease the severity of it.
And I think with Omicron is certainly not going to be the last variant, and it spreads so quickly. I have to add in, we're seeing, and as somebody who has children in a school district, you hear more about it. So thank you for clarifying on that. That's extremely important. Thank you. So the next question is for Dr. Shah. I heard only children with other medical conditions need to be immunized. Is this true? What about healthy kids?
Sure. So I think it's extremely important for us to sort of dispel this type of myth, right? Because if we're really talking about moving past the pandemic, we really have to talk about community immunity. And that requires, depending on the infectivity of Omicron or Delta, we're really looking at upwards of the high 80s to low 90% of people having to be immunized. So if we're really looking at immunization as a pathway to getting back to normal, we're going to have to immunize all of children who are eligible, in the same way that we're going to have to immunize the majority of adults who are eligible. The other part to remember is, while the largest percentage of children who have died from COVID did have pre-existing conditions, COVID is not necessarily a benign disease in children who are quote unquote otherwise healthy. Okay. You can see that in certain data from the CDC, between 1/5 to even 1/3 of children who've been hospitalized for COVID did not have significant pre-existing conditions. And the most common pre-existing condition that people talk about is asthma, which is the number one chronic disease in all of children and certainly prevalent across Long Island. Every single child knows another child who carries around an inhaler. So we really can't sort of rationalize our way out of the basic epidemiology that we need to get immunization rates into the low 90s across all eligible populations if we're going to move past the pandemic.
Thank you so much. And as a follow-up question, which I'll actually put with Dr. Krilov, My child, what is this? This is a question. This is not my question. This is just a general question. My child has had COVID already. Why do they need the vaccine? Aren't they protected? So if a parent was to ask you that, Dr. Krilov, what would you say?
I think it's the same answer as for adults, that although it doesn't sound intuitively obvious, especially with different variants, the immunity from vaccination is actually more potent and seems to be lasting a bit longer. The immunity from having natural infection does wane. And so for better protection, go for vaccine. There are multiple reports of children and adults having second COVID infections.
That's absolutely fascinating. Actually, does anybody have anything to add to that? Oh yes, Dr. Siddiqui, go ahead.
Yes, I agree. And just to add to that, there are some recent reports that say that even if you've been infected and have had an episode of COVID, getting vaccinated puts you even at a higher immunity, and your immune system is even stronger at fighting off different variants, specifically Omicron variant. So definitely getting vaccinated, even though you've had a history of COVID, is definitely a good idea.
Okay. And Dr. Shah, this is actually, I think one of the ones I've heard the most, is the vaccine safe? What side effects should I look for after vaccination?
Sure. The vaccine, when we talk about children 5 to 11, and when we really talk about all populations, is overwhelmingly safe and overwhelmingly effective. And I think it's important for people to understand that, because one of the things that Dr. Siddiqui and Dr. Krilov and I encounter every day are parents who say that, you know, the vaccine is too new, quote unquote, too new or too young, or just came out. Now, that's not really a concern as sort of an existential worry. And that is very hard for us as pediatricians to counsel against. So all we can do is reinforce the data and reinforce the fact that these vaccines are overwhelmingly safe and effective. The clinical trials that were done, for which the FDA based their decision to grant the emergency use authorization, looked at thousands of children. And the most common side effects were things that you can encounter with almost any vaccine. And that is, you can get some low-grade fever, you can get muscle aches, and that occurred in about 10 to 15% of children. But what people forget is that, some pain in your arm occurred in 2 to 3% of the kids who got the placebo shot. That's just associated with getting an injection, not necessarily the vaccine itself. And when you contrast that with the risks of potentially contracting COVID and winding up either hospitalized or transmitting it to someone else who's vulnerable, or MISC, the multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children, it's very clear that the benefits of vaccination far outweigh any risks.
Does anybody have anything they'd like to add to that?
I would add to that I would emphasize strongly that the vaccine has been shown to be safe. And as Dr. Shah just mentioned, safe doesn't mean absolutely harmless. So yes, pain, a little bit of fever, but definitely no untoward effects beyond that of significance. And in fact, now that there are almost, besides the clinical trial Dr. Shah mentioned, now that almost 5 million doses of the vaccine have been administered to children in this age range, no new major untoward side effects have been seen. The one question I get asked most about, which is really more adolescents and young adults and males primarily, is this inflammation of the heart called myocarditis. And that actually can occur, but it's also much more likely to occur with the natural infection in those age ranges. And fortunately, the vaccine-related cases have been mild and have resolved, even if hospitalized, in 1 or 2 days. It has been much less seen in the younger children, and there are some physiologic reasons to believe that would be the case. But there are now a few, but again, out of 5 million cases, 6 to 8 cases, and they still haven't been confirmed yet, that are being reported at most. So there are rare, it doesn't mean it's harmless, but I have to just emphasize again what Dr. Shah said, the benefits are so much better, the safety so much better than getting this infection, which we're in a favor is increasing again.
Thank you so much for that. Dr. Siddiqui, did you have something as well?
I mean, I just wanted to add, and as Dr. Shah and Dr. Prelep were so eloquently stating also, I mean, what I really tell my patients in my office is that you have to look at the risks and the benefits. And, you know, at this point, we can clearly see that the risks of COVID far outweigh, you know, the benefits of the vaccinations is far more important than getting an unknown COVID infection that you don't know what the result will be. You don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. And you don't know if your child will be one of those children that may have the multi-inflammatory syndrome in children, which can be quite severe. And the heart inflammation that Dr. Krylov was talking about in actual COVID can be much, much worse. And the incidences in the vaccinations, in the incidence of the inflammation of the heart in the vaccinated children has been treatable and is something that we look out for and is something that we tell parents to let us know about. And any type of side effects that your child is going through, we wanna know. So it is something that we do kind of talk to the parents about, but it is really important to emphasize that the safety of the vaccine is far more beneficial and, you know, and definitely something that, that, you know, we should have done.
Dr. Shah?
I just want to say it's very important for people to spend time sort of thinking about this. And the reason we say this is because the children that are 5 to 11, yes, the vaccine's only been really available for about a month, but they are a grossly under-immunized population, not just in Nassau and Suffolk County, but across the country. And what's really concerning, and which is why this podcast is particularly timely, is that the pace of vaccination in those children, 5 to 11, in that age group, is slowing down. So if we go back to a couple of weeks ago, about 1.6 million children of the 28 million children in America between the ages of 5 to 11 were getting vaccinated. A couple of weeks later, that pace has now slowed, and for the past couple of weeks has been about 600,000 to 700,000. So the numbers of kids who are presenting themselves to get vaccinated is going down. And if we look at our local data, right, if we talk about completing the vaccine series, in Nassau County, only 12% of kids 5 to 11 have been vaccinated. Compare that with 80 to 99% of adults and 71% of kids who are greater than 12. In Suffolk County, it's actually worse, all right? 7.5% of kids have completed their vaccine series compared to half of kids who are older than 12 and 74 to 96% of kids who are adults. And one of the things I always wind up telling people when they say, oh, well, you know, we live in Nassau County and everyone and the vaccination rates here are high is, you know, coronavirus doesn't stop at the county border, nor does it stop at the bridge, nor does, you know, not to mention the fact that, you know, especially where we live, people travel to Suffolk all the time. So we're really only as well protected as everyone around us is. So, you know, we can't just rely on one region's vaccination rates upon which to make our decisions.
Thank you so much. And, you know, it's interesting because I believe you've all actually answered my next question a lot, which is, have we really looked at the long enough? Have we looked long enough at the children who were immunized to know that these vaccines were safe and won't harm them long term? And I think we've touched on that with our questions. So I want to move on because I know that we're a little pressed for time. So the next question is, where can I get my child vaccinated? And Dr. Krylov, would you like to jump in there?
So there are a number of ways. There are, and I'll turn to Dr. Siddiqui, some pediatric offices that are able to offer vaccination, and certainly going to your primary provider and maintaining your continuity of care is the best way if that's available. If not, a number like ours of the major medical centers also for patients enrolled in their system have vaccine site availability. It's where I practice what I preach. My 11-year-old got her vaccination and completed her series. And There are also the county and the state are running a number of vaccine centers. And finally, the chain pharmacies, even, and this is really their first foray into vaccinating children, are offering vaccination as well. So there are multiple potentials, and it really should not be difficult to find access and obtain this vaccine for your child.
Thank you so much. The next question, and I think that this is very interesting, is the data the FDA used to, is the data the FDA used to make their determination on the safety of vaccination sound? And can you explain it to me?
So we've talked about this a long time because people, particularly on social media, have really talked about how this vaccine was quote unquote rushed. And I've tried a bunch of different analogies, and this is the one that I think seems to work the best. And everyone can let me know. I think back to when we first, especially for parents who are all around our age, I think about to when we got our driver's license, right? When you got your driver's license, you had to make an appointment to take that test. You waited weeks to take the test, then you took the test, then you got the result, then you had to take that 2-hour course, then you had to wait for your road test appointment, and then you got your road test appointment, and then you wound up getting your driver's license. And that process could take almost a year, right? By the time everything was done. But imagine if you got to jump to the head of the line at the DMV every single time. So you got to make your appointment for the next day. Then the day after that, you got to take your 2-hour class. Then the next day you got to take your road test. And then the next day you'd have your license, right? You would get it done in 3 to 4 days, right? Not the 1 year. And that's something that people need to understand. It doesn't mean that any of the steps that the FDA looks at when they evaluate safety and when they evaluate the efficacy of a vaccine were jumped over, because none of them were jumped over. What it meant was is that the organization prioritized COVID vaccination because of the public health emergency. So evaluating COVID vaccine data and getting votes from the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and getting evaluated by the FDA and the authority called VRBPAC, the Vaccine Related Biologics Group, all of those things occurred as quickly as they could because the COVID vaccines and their information jumped to the front of the line, but no step was missed. And I think that's very important for people to understand.
If I may, I think I'd add to that, many people have also said, well, this is a new and different technology. It really has been in use for other agents and viruses for decades. So it is not a new technology. And the other thing that accelerated this development based on the pandemic need is the amount of financial support that the government threw behind it that enabled things to move along and incentivize the companies to do it. But again, have to emphasize what Dr. Shah said, that it did not short circuit any of the evaluation and review processes to make sure that the data were sound and that everything we're saying about safety and efficacy are supported by really hard facts.
And just to add to that, not only was the data itself sound and all of the ways that vaccination approval takes place was going forward and in the proper way, but the amount of data or the amount of children and adults that were enrolled in the trials are much, much higher than some of the other previous vaccines. And not only that, but we were doing real world studies during one of the most infectious time periods. So some of the times when the Pfizer vaccine was studied and the children were enrolled in those trials were during Delta surges. And so that really gives you some real-time data as to how the effectiveness of the vaccine is and the safety of the vaccine.
Another point just about how relatively, the vaccine hasn't been out for long enough time, right? I think it's important for people to understand that when we look at vaccination, the vast majority of potential side effects that are related to vaccination occur within the first 4 months of vaccination. The vaccine was studied, particularly for children 5 to 11, for 6 months before it was approved. So they went 2 months even longer than the data would suggest they even needed to, specifically to allay some of the fears that people would have. We know the majority of vaccine reactions occur within hours or the first week. And then after that, you have that period of surveillance for up to 4 months. And the only reason the 4 month period really exists is because in 1976, there was a swine flu vaccine that caused one type of reaction called Guillain-Barré syndrome. And that vaccination and that side effect of Guillain-Barré syndrome occurred within 3 to 4 months after the swine flu immunization in 1976. But even then, that vaccine, which was not considered necessarily as safe as it could be, only increased the rate of that disease by 1 in 100,000 people. So it really gives you an idea of the scale of safety that we're talking about.
Thank you so much. And the last question we have, and this one is, we are really coming up on time here. So there is a lot of fiction out there about COVID and the vaccine, particularly on the internet and social media. What resources do pediatricians trust for parents to learn more about vaccination?
That's a very great question. Sometimes I get asked a lot about some of the side effects that people read about online. What I say first is to make sure that you're kind of getting your information from a trusted area, trusted source. So the American Academy of Pediatrics actually has a great website called www.healthychildren.org. It's a very great resource that has a lot of just informative kind of articles and pages, and then they have multiple references to journals and things like that that they get their data and information from, and it's a very trusted resource. So that's one of the areas that I point my parents to. And the other thing that I do want to mention is that some of the information out there is a lot of misinformation based on some really specific groups that take certain things and kind of promote it wildly without any scientific basis or fact. And one of the main things that I'm not sure if we touched on previously was the relationship between this vaccine and infertility. And that's completely false and a complete misrepresentation of this vaccine. And there are even other vaccines that kind of come up with that misinformation also. So I want to alert parents as to some of that is a really big misinformation campaign that's run by people that don't want you to get vaccinated, and it's very harmful for the whole vaccine process.
Well, thank you so much. This has been very informative, and I really hope that that this panel helps parents make an informed decision. That Healthy Children website I'm going to put up in the show notes in case anybody would like to refer to it. And if somebody would like to reach out to your offices, where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Sarah Siddiqui. I'm at the NYU Langone Huntington Medical Group in Huntington. And you can find me, just type in my name in that, NYU Langone, and you can find me, and please reach out with any questions that you have. And I also want to thank Syosset Public Library for having this forum hosting. And I also want to just say that the library, your library system is amazing. And one of my favorite spots is the library. So support
thank
your local
you so
library.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Dr. Shaw, thank you so much as well.
Thank you for having us. I really think it's important that we have this resource together all in one spot so parents can listen while they're in the car and really listen while they have a little bit of free time and really educate themselves about why it's so important for their kids to get immunized.
Well, thank you so much. And hopefully we will be chatting about something less COVID-y in the future. All right. Well, thank you once again on behalf of Turn the Page podcast. As mentioned, I will be posting the information, the website that has been recommended by the doctors on the show notes of Turn the Page. And until next time, we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.